This is edition 260. On the broadcast today, I am going to be sharing a conversation with Beirut-based writer and commentator Yazan Al-Saidi. I spoke with Yazan about the realities in Lebanon over this last year in the context of the Israeli government bombardment of major areas of the country, including the capital, Beirut. Yazan gives some important voice and also firsthand experience of what life has been like in Beirut over the last year. This is an important part of understanding the wider regional colonial violence that is being unleashed by the Israeli government in multiple contexts, including, of course, the devastating situation in Gaza, Palestine. So I will let our conversation speak for itself. This is my exchange with writer and commentator Yazan Al-Saidi, based in Beirut, Lebanon, here on Free City Radio.
Internationally, I think it's probably hard for people to get a sense of thinking about, you know, incidents we see in the news in Lebanon as part of a broader context. So thinking about the last year, the massive displacement from the south, the bombings that, you know, really targeted a lot of agricultural land and also homes, Israeli state bombings in the south. All of this is happening not in a vacuum. And the recent events, of course, happened in the context of the last year. But all of this takes place within a history. And it's hard to get into all of this. But I would just first ask you, if you can first introduce yourself and maybe highlight one or two points that you feel when you're sort of gathering a sense of how events today in Lebanon are being communicated globally. If you could maybe highlight one or two points that you feel are essential to sort of understanding insights that you have that you feel are urgent to fill in relation to how things are being reported on.
So my name is Yazan Al-Saadi. I am a Syrian with a Canadian passport. I've been living and working in Beirut, Lebanon for more than 12 years now, mainly in journalism, writing, analysis, research, stuff like that. To your question about the two points that are so urgent to discuss in terms of Lebanon, my first thought is the gravity of the situation. If we can all agree that what Israel is doing in Gaza and Palestine is a genocide, it is a form of policy and mentality, we also need to understand that that is being exported to other geographies, Lebanon included. So the nature of warfare and violence unleashed by Israel is genocidal, but it is sort of controlled and applied towards a specific type of community, whether you can say it's a sectarian thing or geography, because it's mainly in the south or southern suburbs of Beirut, or a political ideology, which is those in relation to Hezbollah and the armed resistance and et cetera, et cetera. But it's genocidal. So that means the rules and norms that we are usually expected in warfare or counterterrorism or whatever you want to call it is all gone. So there is that urgency, as it is in Palestine and in Gaza as well. So there is that part of the aspect that needs to be in the discussions and narratives about Lebanon. So it's linked in that way. Secondly, to your initial point about how everything is interlocked, I think that is crucial, because the war in Lebanon is linked to what's going on in Palestine, which is linked to regional aspects and international politics, and related to what's going on within the American domestic sphere. So we are all linked. So these questions or these issues isn't something that is related to, quote unquote, over there. It impacts us wherever us is. And this is something I try to articulate as a person living and working in the Middle East, in Beirut, with a Canadian passport. I have experienced the West and seen the issues and problems in the West, in Canada or in you know, London, England, when I was studying there. But these are all linked, you know? These are all linked together because there is a political ideology, an economic ideology. It's all the struggles are really, when you look at it from a grander view, really linked. So it is imperative that we work together, and the structures of justice and accountability that we think are there aren't really there. And here I'm talking about the international legal mechanisms, you know, like the ICC, ICJ. So that means that as peoples and communities throughout the world, how do we want to have justice on key issues when clearly the political class and elites do not want to do that? And this could be in terms of Palestine, which is very clear for most people in the world, or climate change, you know, which is also clear for most people in the world. So I think it is a very important discussion that will define a lot of what will happen in the coming century. I really want to stress that Palestine matters to me, not just because I am, quote unquote, an Arab, but it matters to me from a moral, political, human, strategic, so many levels, you know, like it's, yeah, it's very hard to convey. And I see it from here, from Beirut, with all my privileges, even though like people are dying here, you know, massacres are happening very close to me, you know. It's all connected.
I wanted to get into this reporting trend that we see in Western press, but it's also, of course, having an impact globally because of, you know, imperialist dynamics of power, which is this capacity to sort of carry a narrative from the Israeli state that very much attempts to separate this conception of Lebanon with a conception of Hezbollah, and sort of like carry this narrative that says, oh, well, these are strikes, quote unquote, targeting Hezbollah infrastructure. And knowing a little bit about your work, I can gather that your understanding of the domestic sphere of you know, political struggles in Lebanon is not simplistic. And I think that allows also for there to be an important underlining of this point, which is that if we think about, you know, criticizing and opposing and protesting the Israeli bombing and specifically what is labeled as targeting Hezbollah, that is, you know, entirely possible to do, to protest that without subscribing to a certain ideology. I just think that those things, there's sort of like this political, these levers are pulled in discourse and framings that sort of create these pathways for justification for the massacres you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, no one wants to directly say that they're for massacres, just, you know, like that. There's always a justification or a narrative. And I do think from multiple levels, one can hold complicated points of view and try to take a position that objectively, if there is such a thing, is the correct or moral position to take. Hezbollah is a complicated organization. I say this as, you know, it's complicated as an organization. It's complicated for me, because I have my issues with Hezbollah from a political, personal, etc. stance, you know? It is a reactionary religious organization, and there are problems that come with that, you know? At the same time, I recognize how was Hezbollah formed, what was the urgency, what was the context. It was a response to an occupation. It stems from the failures of certain other types of political ideologies and organizations to fight back against colonialism, power, etc. in so many ways. Hezbollah also has committed crimes in Syria, right? It was part and parcel and allied with the Assad regime, which is a brutal dictatorship that committed horrendous atrocities on people. And that was justified for so many reasons. Nonetheless, I do think that we need to cut through a lot of these complexities and agree on certain axioms, right? There has to be clearly an armed resistance against Israel. I cannot see any form of political compromise when it comes to a fascist, apartheid, nuclear-armed state. The dynamics just don't work with me. You can't just compromise or accommodate that. There has to be some kind of response, you know? So we can at least agree about that, and we try to align our ideals, our hopes, with that response, you know? At the same time, like it can be consistent, because I think when liberals talk about human rights and caring about people, they're not being honest because they care about certain types of people, right? Like the discussions about October 7th, for example, particularly in the West, you can play into it and be like, yeah, it is an atrocity. Civilians were killed. And that's bad. So if you want to extend that every life matters, then isn't that the same in Lebanon? Like the Israelis leveled 4 residential buildings filled with people to assassinate Hassan Nasrallah and several senior officials. From a philosophical, debatable side, it's the trolley problem. So you're telling me that the answer to the trolley problem that we all learned as children is to blow up the track and vaporize the bodies? Like, what are we talking about here, you know? Like, I think you can really cut through the bullshit if you just, like, I think so, you know? And just being direct. I think part of the framing also falls on us as Arabs, or, you know, people that are for the cause, is that sometimes we are shy to be very direct about what is the problem, you know? And the problem is occupation, colonialism, supremacy, racism, you know? It's so direct, it's so clear.
Thanks so much. So just going back to some of the points that you underlined, can you talk a little bit more about the sort of political statements we see in the West? I'm thinking of, you know, very specific politicians that represent, you know, certain national projects in Canada and France, for example. If we're talking about Macron or Justin Trudeau, they attempt to sort of hold this line where they're seen to be respecting international law and human rights, but they're clearly not applying those framings when it comes to the Israeli state. It might seem like an obvious point for a lot of people listening, and that's fine, but I do think it's important maybe to underline beyond, you know, 2 or 3 sentences why looking into this is important.
I think it relates to, with your 2 examples, why hasn't Macron or Trudeau really held Israel accountable to the most basics of international law? Like, if you read the text, it's right there, you know? Like, it's very clear, the violations and all that stuff. But the ultimate reason, I think, is because it's a reckoning with their own pasts. Canada and France have not appropriately dealt with the legacy of their history, colonialism, and the genocides that they committed to indigenous non-white populations. In Canada particularly, there's this liberal sort of narrative that, you know, they accommodated and negotiated their way to power. But no, there was a genocide, just like in the States, you know? And the latest of which we all know about is the residential schools. An apology itself doesn't cut it. They haven't appropriately dealt with their own histories of colonialism, and they're trying to wiggle their ways out of it. So by holding Israel accountable, it's like holding themselves accountable, because Israel is practically doing the modern version of what they did, you know? And we have to understand that international law isn't truly international. It's a system of rules and regulations that were created during the development phase of Western Empire that slowly started being the guidelines of, you know, governance and international relations today. Now, things change and morph because of, you know, challenges, but initially the foundation is problematic, so we need to really rethink the international way of jurisprudence, you know, because I think we can really do something that is more inclusive, more accountable, more sustainable. But that's a whole other conversation, you know?
Well, one argument against having that conversation is that the issues of the moment are so urgent that there's no time and space to sort of think beyond these boxes. If you could share your comments about why that positionality is problematic for you.
I mean, there's always time and space to have this type of conversation, you know? You make the room, because I think it's part of the present problems, right? Because I think history isn't something that is forgotten. It's not like isolated events, right? That just disappears. There are things that linger, that build from it, you know, that develop the present, that sets the foundation to the future. So if we truly want to develop better societies, and look, there is a long game here, right? Like when I look at things from an internationalist perspective, there should be a long game for us as humanity, as an organism, in this ball of rock with so many other, you know, animals and living things, you know? Because it is necessary. There is an urgency for it in the scheme of time. And that is also the present for us, you know? So I think it definitely, there is always space to have this type of conversation, because it also holds us to account to ourselves, and it gives us a sort of checks and balance, you know, as we try to take steps forward. I don't think, you know, one of the problems I feel like in a lot of movements or you know, anything trying to push groups of people forward is that people are afraid to say they fucked up, you know? So let's start with that. Like, I think even revolutionary leftist groups or whomever could say, hey, you know, we fucked up or we made a mistake. Yalla, you know, we own it. Let's keep going. There's a lot to fight. And, you know, that is something to consider.
For those listening to this conversation, Yazin, you're speaking to us from Beirut. I'm sure people have been following the news. But maybe you could just share one or two personal reflections for you of moments that have been important in the last weeks that you would like to communicate that have impacted you, or things that you feel haven't sort of emerged from the fog and the literally the bombings happening right now in Beirut.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be nice for people to understand that families are being annihilated, you know, in these bombings. There is just so much overwhelming power and violence that the Israelis are unleashing, right? Because the Israelis are literally vaporizing bodies, and these are families, right? And that has an impact on people. So I wonder with you know, audiences, wherever they are, do you understand that? Do you understand the ramifications, you know, if this isn't stopped? So it's a dark thought, perhaps. But at the same time, people persevere. I think that's something that is incredible. You know, there is a sort of adaptability that happens. It's surreal because it's a double-edged sword. You can normalize living in a very, you know, dystopic situation. And some people might, you know, call that a sort of paralysis. But I look at it and see it as well, you know, as a sort of, you know, resistance in a way. Doing the most mundane things can be very meaningful when, you know, you're in this context, you know, you're working and living in this context where you're constantly told by the narrative that you don't exist or matter, but you clearly do exist and you clearly do matter. So, yeah, it's a lot to think about. It's a lot to think about. And if I can add like a third point to really tie it all together, I think I look also at the conversations because, you know, we're looking at the date now. We're speaking November 13th. And like in the West, there is that fallout and shock with Trump winning in a sort of doom and gloom kind of narrative. But I think this is an opportunity, guys, because now that we're all clearly targets and they're very clear about their fascistic nature and their genocidal policies that are so clear that even the liberal veneer is ripped off. Let's respond, you know, let's respond very confidently and very clearly. You know, let's be very vicious here. No more nice politics and compromise. Let's own up to the values we want, which is, you know, for me, dignity and equality and liberty for all, you know, and not just for certain types of people. So I think that's the fight, you know, and it's all up to us and whoever us is, quote unquote, because there's no one else, guys. It's us. So, yeah.
So last point, I'm just thinking about what you said and sort of thinking again about, you know, you've done a lot of media criticism and commentary. I'm just looking at a report from NPR that was published today. And the headline is, "In Lebanon, residents fear Hezbollah could be hiding among people displaced by war." That's the headline. I mean, just sort of a quick reading of that and sort of why normalizing that type of headline is so deeply, problematic is a light term, but...
Let's start with, it's clearly a disturbing headline. It's also a very common headline that you see today and historically, right? Like the conversation we're having about the narratives and the way Western media talks about what's going on is the same conversation people have been having for decades, because that's the Western media, you know? Like, I think there have been progress, quote unquote, but it initially the foundations or the problem, the rot is still there, guys. It's always been there and it's going to continue being there unless, you know, it's called out and a whole alternative is set up. But what I want to add is complexity, because what's interesting about that story is that there is truth in it. People or certain communities in Lebanon are scared about hosting displaced communities from areas that are directly impacted by war, which, you know, the headline here calls Hezbollah, you know, as a quick phrase, is real because Israel threatens that, right? Israel does hit houses that are hosting displaced people as a sort of punishment to create terrorism, right? To create that divide, because it's part of a political policy and a strategy that is backed also by the U.S., because the U.S. has its interests. So there are those dynamics at play in crafting that narrative. So we need to also unpack that and understand those challenges, right? I mean, I get it. I get it as a person, like, my home is right next to a school, or my apartment is right next to a school that is hosting displaced people. And I am very fully aware with Israel's recent history that they can hit the school and kill people, right? They'll use any excuse, command and control center, whatever they use, they're going to do that. So for me, I'm naturally worried, but at the same time, displaced people need to be housed, right? So there is this dynamic that I have as a normal human being. But ultimately, the danger is that Israel is doing that, you know, hitting people that are displaced or hosting displaced people. So that is the conversation behind the discussion. That should have been the headline. That is the framing. But they won't see that. NPR won't see that because that's not their gaze. That is not their point of view. That is not their position. And that is the truth, you know. And we need to be very direct with them and be like, hey, guys, you're biased. When you talk about objectivity in the Western press, it's hilarious because there is no objectivity. We are all biased with our ideologies and positions. And there is nothing wrong with saying that. Let's just be straight, you know? So I think there's a lot to unpack there, that story. But I think that's the conversation. That's what we're doing, right? That's what I think people need to be having.
Yazin, thanks so much for speaking today.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to have this conversation.
That was a conversation with Yazin Al-Saidi, based in Beirut, Lebanon, for Free City Radio. Thank you so much to Yazin for being on the program this week. I'm Stefan Christoff. Thanks for tuning in. Free City Radio broadcasts weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. On CGLO 1690 AM, also in Montreal, on Wednesdays at 8:30 AM. On CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, on Tuesdays at 8 AM. On CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, on Saturdays at 7 AM. On Met Radio 1280 AM in Toronto at 5:30 AM on Fridays. On CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. and now on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We are also a podcast. Look us up. I'm Stefan Christoff. Thanks for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week.
Can we get much higher?